Okay, so we are going to begin now the new perek on Mem Zayin Amud Beis, fourth perek. The main subject of this perek officially is going to be the matter of Hatzmona, insulating. We've touched on it before. You have in the beginning of the first half of the previous perek, we talked about the concept of Shehiyah, where you're trying to keep a pot of food or water or whatever it is warm on Shabbos by keeping it on the stove. Now we're focusing on a different aspect, which is where you're wrapping it up in something. You're wrapping it up or putting it inside something that retains heat in order to have it stay warm. So that kind of thing is called Hatzmona. So officially that's the subject of our perek. It's a shortish perek, and actually a good chunk of the perek actually is going to be digressing to talk about other matters. Good part of the perek, for example, is actually going to be talking about matters of mukta again, which we talked about in the previous perek as well. So there's a couple of things about it. So Hatzmona means then where you're wrapping up or insulating the food in something to preserve its heat. Now, we learned before there's two kinds of material that it's possible to use for the purpose. There's what's called Gavar HaMoisef Hevel, which is something that adds heat, and then there's Gavar, and then there's those things that don't add heat. They just preserve the existing heat that's there. The rule is, we learned near the end of the second parak a couple of weeks ago, that Gavar HaMoisef Hevel, so on a daraisa level, there'd be no problem with either one of them. You're not cooking, you're not doing anything. You want to insulate it in Gavar HaMoisef Hevel, something which is actually going to add heat, then fine. I mean, we're not talking about where you're putting it on top of the coals or something, although we'll get to that in a minute. But we're talking about, in other words, for example, the Mishnah is going to give us a list of things. For example, the first one on the Mishnah's list is Gefes, which is pulp left over from pressing olives or sesame seeds, where if you put a pot down and cover it with that stuff, then it'll add heat, and the pulp pressed together will generate a certain amount of heat. From the Daraisa, though, there's no problem with that. You're not cooking or anything. Midrabanan, we learned at the end of the second parak, we learned on Daf Lamed Daled that the Chachamim prohibited you from doing Hatmana in Gavar HaMoisef Hevel, even on Erev Shabbos. So if it's something like this olive pulp or whatever, which adds heat, then you're not even allowed to do that, even if you're putting the pot in before Shabbos. And if it's something that's not Moisef Hevel, if it's not something that adds heat, it just preserves the existing heat, then you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos.
Why?
Okay, so why? So we talked about on Daf Lamed Daled as follows. According to Rashi, there are two different issues involved over here. On Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to do Hatzmona of any kind because you may find that the pot, you're coming to insulate the pot, you're going to find, you know what, it's cooler than I want anyway. What good is it going to do to insulate it, even in Gavar She'ein Moisef Hevel, if the food is not hot enough to eat. So I'm going to go put it back on the fire for a little while to warm it up, and then I'm going to wrap it up. And then, of course, you'd be doing Bishul on Shabbos, and you'd be doing Havara or Bishul. Then you have, so that's as far as on Shabbos. As far as Erev Shabbos, the problem is that because you may think if you can use Gavar HaMoisef Hevel, you're allowed to use something that increases the heat, then maybe also you're going to think that you can use Remet, which is ashes mixed. ashes mixed with live coals, where then you have the problem that you may stir up the coals on Shabbos. So according to Rashi, there's two different issues: one with doing Hatmona on Shabbos in Gavar HaMoisef in anything, and the other one in doing on Erev Shabbos in Gavar HaMoisef Hevel. You have other Rishonim, the Rif and the Rambam, and a couple of other Rishonim learn it a little bit differently, that the reason why you can't do it in the Be'oyim, why you can't do with Gavar HaMoisef Hevel before Shabbos, is because you may find that the pot is too hot. then what you're going to do is you're going to uncover it for a little while, and then on Shabbos you're going to be recovering it. And since the Chacham made this gzera about not doing Hatzmona on Shabbos, it's going to amount to that now you're doing Hatzmona. Anyway, that's what it is. Those are the basic dinim. Now within that you have a couple of machloikas in among the Rishonim. One of them is discussed in the first Tosfos on the Perek over here, and the other one is discussed in the second Tosfos. We learned before that when it comes to Shehiya, we learned in the first Perek, we learned more extensively at the beginning of the third Perek, that there are a couple of cases where you're allowed to do Shehiya, where you're allowed to keep a pot of food on the stove going into Shabbos. One of them was we had an example where the food is completely raw at the beginning of Shabbos, because then realistically there's no chance, if we're talking about meat or something like that, which takes a long time to cook, realistically there's no possibility it's going to be ready to eat tonight, therefore you're not going to bother stirring up the coals. Would the same thing apply to Hatzmana? Would you be allowed to do Hatzmana, let's say, of raw food like that? Also, we learned at the beginning of the previous Perek, we had the opinion of Hananya, and we said that many Rishonim learn that the halacha is like Hananya, that if the food is cooked k'maycha ben rasoi, then you're allowed to leave it on the stove on Shabbos without putting a blech or goruf or katrum, etc. So the question is, would the same thing apply over here? So Tosfos over here brings a Rashbam that says, yes, same dinim apply. Rabbi Natan in the same Tosfos disagrees. So you have a machlokes Rishonim on that one. One distinction that the Rishonim make is when you have the pot on the stove, okay, on the one hand it's on the stove, but on the other hand, the fact of the matter is only the bottom of it is in contact with the source of heat. So if the food is raw at the beginning of Shabbos, let's say, then what good is it going to do to stir up the coals? It's still not going to be ready tonight. As opposed to when you have Hatzmana, the whole thing, the Hatzmana, first of all, you're doing usually for the next day. You're not doing Hatzmana in order to eat it tonight. For that you would do Shehiya. And since it's all covered, then maybe you still might try stirring up the coals or whatever in order to heat it up. You have Rishonim who learn that that's also, if you're doing it before Shabbat with Davar Amosim Hevel. That's one machlokas. Another machlokas is on the question we're going to be talking about in the parak about Hatzmana. But what do we mean by Hatzmana? Hatzmana literally means burying. So does it mean that the entire pot is covered in the material that you're insulating it in? Some Rishonim say yes. Other Rishonim say that, therefore, if it's only covered from the bottom or only from the sides or whatever, then that's not called Hatzmana. That would be called Shehiya or something else.
Could you repeat that?
If, let's say, you have the pot of...
Hatzmana is what exactly?
Hatzmana, we're saying, is insulating. So does insulating involve, does the definition of Hatzmana in halacha involve that the pot is covered from all sides with the insulating material, or would it also be considered Hatzmana even if it's only covered from some sides? So you have, for example, Rabbi Hanano, the Baal Amor, the Rosh, etc., many other Rishonim learn that when you're talking about Davar HaMoisif Hebel, when you're talking about something that adds heat, so that's another point that Tosfos discusses in the second Tosfos on our Perek, when you have something that adds heat, and we're saying you're not allowed to do Hatzmana in it before Shabbos, that would apply even if the pot is not completely covered in the material that adds heat, it's only touching it on the bottom. If what it's on top of is, for example, actual cold, then that would be considered a point in Shehiya, not Hatzmana. And the dinim of Shehiya we learned in the previous Perek, that usually you need goruf v'katum. Usually you need the equivalent of that nowadays is a blech.
What's the breakdown difference between Shehiya and Hatzmana?
One big difference is that Shehiya is more lenient. Because we're saying that you're allowed to leave a pot of food on a stove before Shabbos, even though the stove still has coals in it, let's say, as long as you covered the coals with ashes. Or, for example, we said you could do goruf v'katrum. You could sweep out the coals. So even though there's a certain amount of heat still in the oven, you're still allowed to leave pots of food on it on Shabbos. or if you cover the coals with ashes, or nowadays we cover them with a blech. And again, you still have heat that's still getting into the food. Nevertheless, that's mutter. Whereas when it comes to Hashmona, we're saying if it's davar amoisek hevel, if it's something that adds heat, then it would be oser. So if we say that it's only considered Hashmona if it's covered on all six sides, top, bottom, and side, and otherwise considered shahia, then it comes out a major kula. The Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch, based on the poskim before him, that indeed the general minhag is like that. The general minhag is that we consider that because we I take that back. The Alter Rebbe says nowadays it's more common to just leave pots in the oven and they don't wrap anything around them, so then it's considered shahia. But if you have, for example, if a pot is sitting, let's say, on top of the coals and it's not wrapped up on the side, is that considered Hashmona, or is that considered Shehiya, that you have this Macholikus? Let's say
one side is not covered but is exposed to the sun and the rest are covered. It would amount to exactly the same accumulation of heat.
That's true, but putting it in the sun is neither here nor there. If you put it in the sun, we learned in the previous parak that even told the chama are only also the rabbanon, and therefore we're not, so fine. You're not allowed to put food in the sun. We said you're not allowed to put food in the sun to cook. It's also the rabbanon. But if you were to say that most of the hasmona is done with some material, and then some of it is done with the sun, I don't know. According to the poskim, according to the rishonim, who say that hasmona is only if it's covered on all sides, I rather doubt they would consider that Hashmona. I don't know, though.
And number two, it depends on the surrounding temperature. If it's very, very hot outside, like in summer in Israel, and you cover it even on three sides instead of four, it might very well be Hashmona. Why? I mean,
but keep in mind, there's a difference. We have to look at what's the material that we're using for Hashmona. Is it davar hamoisif hevel, or is it davar she'enim moisif hevel? That's the key question. Are we talking about a material that in bulk is able to add heat to whatever is insulated inside it, as in the first half of our Mishnah is going to give a list of such things? And so in that case, this whole machloekas, therefore, is primarily talking about when you're doing hatmana on Erev Shabbos. So if you're putting the food in, you're wrapping it or insulating in something before Shabbos, is it considered Hashmona only if you're doing it on all six sides? And otherwise, then it doesn't have the din of Hashmona. So then we would have to see. If it's right on the coals, then it would be considered Shehiyah. If not, then not. We discussed also at the beginning over there, is it talking about that, it could be the other way also, we're showing him talk about, that maybe if it is touching the coal, I said it wrong. You could say that even just the fact that it's touching the coal might itself on one side might be enough to be considered Hashmona, and only, for example, if it's on a tripod, which is sitting in the coals, if it's on a stand, where the stand is in the coals, and then the pot is on top of that, maybe only then it would be considered Shehiyah. Okay, I mean, you have the ginnim and the various opinions about it are a little bit complicated. You have a couple of simonim about it in Shulchan Aruch that deal with the details. The Alter Rebbe mentions at the end, the Alter Rebbe actually has a couple of things on this. The main simonim in Shulchan Aruch that talk about the ginnim of Hashmona are Resh Nun Zayin and Resh Nun Ches. At the end of Rishon and Test, the Alter Rebbe gives Hilchos Shehiya v'Hashmona b'Ksara l'fi minig b'dinah se'ilu, a brief description of the halachas of what we're allowed to do as far as Shehiya and Hashmona, the way we do things in our country, where again, the Alter Rebbe mentions that in general, most of the time, what we do to keep food warm for Shabbos amounts to more Shehiya than Hashmona, given again, that the Alter Rebbe says usually they don't wrap up the food. They just leave it inside the oven to keep hot. So that would be Shehiyah. Again, if it's partially wrapped up, or if it's partially, let's say, if it's on the coals or partially inside them, that might be Hashmona, that might be not. That depends on those opinions. In the back of the Shulchan Aruch, also the Alter Rebbe has Ma'adura Bastra for Simon Ration and Test, which is a very, very long, exhaustive description, Alpi Alocha, of the various opinions and the implications of them.
How would wrapping it before Shabbos, right before Shabbos, in a blanket? So that's not adding heat, but it's definitely
a blanket is not dover hamoisef hevel.
Right, it's just
the blanket itself is not capable of adding heat to the food. So therefore, you're fine. Yeah.
That really means that Friday night, let's say you forgot to hide it, you can go or you can give it its licht. You can go on Shabbos and hide it because it's not adding heat, right?
No, that's what we're saying. You're not allowed to do atmana of any kind on Shabbos, even in Dover, Shein, and Moisef Hevel. Now, what you are allowed to do, as we're going to discuss later on, once the food was, once you did atmana before Shabbos, then you're allowed to partially unwrap it, take out the food, and then rewrap it. So let's say you wrapped it in a towel before Shabbos. So on Shabbos, you unwrap part of the towel, you open up the lid, you take out whatever you need, and then you put back the lid and cover over the towel.
Oh, that's a correct part. Okay.
All right. So let's begin, and we'll see it as we go through. We'll see as we go through the parish how these various issues come up. So let's just
If you lift the cover of a crock pot, and you, by putting it back, you could consider that that's atmana. In a way,
that's possible. And actually, again, it might be atmana. It might be also what we learned about before, chazara, putting the food in the crock pot. I mean, the truth is, taking food out of the crock pot without taking out the liner first is not so simple anyway, because whenever you put back in the ladle, then you're putting food back in where it's going to get cooked in the crock pot. So actually, there you have the issue. You have to take out the inside lining of the crock pot, and we learned in the previous parak that then in order to be able to put it back in afterwards, you have there which would be what's called chazara. Then you have various things you have to be holding in your hand. You have to have in mind that you were going to put it back, etc. But you have a good point. Putting back the cover. Actually, I'm not sure. It might be the same kind of thing where you have to be holding it in your hand the whole time. I'm not sure about that point. Actually,
that's something that's done sometimes with two people together. One person will hold it, and then the person will open the cover and take it off. You definitely have a mind to put it back, and it's not being rested. You pick up. All right.
Right.
Well, that doesn't remove the issue. There's two people there. You're still putting back the cover.
Right, but again, the question, but basically, what it is it's related to the concept of chazara that we talked about before. It's not so much related to hatmana because it was already covered up earlier. So then this is similar to uncovering it, taking out the food that you need, and putting it back.
I'm just giving example because you meant. You said that covering with a towel and then taking the towel on Shabbos and putting it back or partially.
Right. No, I didn't say you can only partially put back the towel. No, what it is you take off the towel from the top of the pot, you take out what you need and then you put the towel back.
Well, putting the cover back is like putting the towel back. That's my point.
Fine, as long as it was in there before Shabbos, then you should be good. No.
Well, that's atmana.
Not new, but okay. But we said as long as you did atmana before Shabbos,
right.
Now what you're doing is on Shabbos you're taking something out and replacing the cover. That's fine. You can take out what you need and replace the cover. That's not considered doing a new atmana.
You're talking about a new atmana on Shabbos.
You're talking about a new atmana on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do yet. Okay. So let's start, and again, we'll see how these details shake out as we go through the parish. Okay. So the Mishnah starts off. Vameh tomnin vameh ein tomnin. What are you allowed to do atmana in, and what are you not allowed to do atmana in? First, we're going to be focusing mostly on what you're allowed and not allowed to use on Erev Shabbos. Because again, on Shabbos itself, you can't use anything. On Shabbos itself, you can't even use Dover She'en and Moshe Hevel. So therefore, when we're going to be distinguishing between the different materials, what is Moisef Hevel and what is not, then that's only relevant to when you first did that mana on Erev Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, "In Tomnin Lo Begefes, you're not allowed to do Hatmana, again on Erev Shabbos. You mean in Gefes, which is the pulp left over after you press things for oil, We're going to see in the Gemara the two kinds. There's one that comes from olives and one that comes from sesame seeds. And we're going to see in the Gemara which one we're referring to, or whether we're referring to both. So you can't use that. The loy with zebel, or with animal dung, that would also, you have a pile of it together, generates a certain amount of heat. The loy with melach, and not with salt. The loy with sid, or with lime, which is used for plaster. The loy with oil, or with sand. Then lachen, then yevashin. All of that applies. This whole list that we just listed is whether they're moist or whether they're dry. Because when they're moist, then the moisture also reacts with whatever's in them, and it creates and generates heat. But even when they're dry, there's a certain amount of heat generated by them. So all of those you can't use. But then the Mishnah continues. Here's another list. Veloid the teven, you're not allowed to eat straw for Akmana. Veloid the zogin, or peels left over from pressing grapes. Veloid the muchin, and not with fluff. The muchin basically means, Rashi says, muchin is basically anything soft and fluffy. It includes, for example, cotton. It includes soft bits of wool from an animal. It includes, let's say you have worn out clothing, the fluff that comes off them. All those kinds of things are called muchin. So you're not allowed to use those. Veloy ba'asavim, or grass. All of those, bizman shehin lachin. Those last four that we listed, the straw, the grape peel, the muchin, and the grass, is only bizman shehin lachin. You're not allowed to use those when they're moist. I will turn them behind cannibation, but you're allowed to use them when they're dry, because then when they're dry, then they're not moist at all.
And Gefes?
Gefes, we said, is going to be moist at all, regardless whether it's dry or not.
Why? What's the difference?
Because that's the difference. Certain things have the property. You know, every so often, once in a while, you hear in the news something where, for example, a fire broke out in the house, and it turns out, you know, the person had a pile of oily rags in their garage or something, and eventually, you know, the pile was sitting there, and eventually it generated enough internal heat to reach the kindling point and start burning. Certain things, that's the nature of them, is you have a pile of certain things, then they generate a certain amount of internal heat, and then if you have a pot. Insulated in them, then the heat gets transferred to that.
The first part of the Mishnah, second Mishnah, is talking about if it's wet or not wet. The first half is if it's wet or dry, and the second part of it's only if it's wet.
Exactly. So we had nine items mentioned in the Mishnah. Of those nine, the first five is whether they're dry or not. And the second one is if they're dry, then they're fine to use, because then they're not moist at all. All right. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Iboy lehu. Gefes shol zeisim tnan. Are we talking about the pulp left over from olive pressing? Avol the shumshim and shapu, that you're not allowed to use. Avol the shumshim and shapu dummy. But the gefes, the pulp left over from pressing sesame seed, would be fine to use for Akmana, because the point is, the Tractamus explains, is that the pulp of sesame seeds it generates much less heat than pulp of olives. So the question is, basically, is it also, even if it's only adding a little bit of heat, as is true of pulp of sesame seeds, so it would only be if it's adding a lot of heat, like in the case of olive pulp, then it would be also. Maybe not. Maybe the Mishnah means you can't use sesame pulp, and how much more so you can't use olive pulp, because that for sure adds more heat.
What's olive pulp exactly?
So you have olives that you press, and then you have what's left over after you finish pressing the olives to get oil is olive pulp. It's called gefes.
What's besabad shoshemen?
A besabad is an olive press. So you take olives to a beis habad and press them, what you have left afterwards, you have, or the oil flows into the tank that's there for that purpose, and what you have left in the press is called gefes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway. So, okay. So that's the question. So which kind of toshma? The Amar of Zera Mishum Chad Debei Rav Yanai. We can prove because Rav Yanai said, Rav Zera said in the name of one of the Chachamim from the yeshiva of Rav Yanai. Kupa Shetoman Ba. If you have a basket, that you did have Tzmona in, so you filled up the basket with something that's not Moisek, that's Einei Moisek Hevel. So let's say you filled it up, for example, in our Mishnah, we had, for example, the second list over there, the things that we said that you can use when they're dry, for example, straw. So let's say you filled up a basket with straw, you put the pot inside it, and then you covered the top of it with straw. So fine, we said as long as the straw is dry, then you're okay. Also, l'hamnicha al gesa sholzeisin. Then Rav Zera is telling us that you're still not allowed to take that. You're still not allowed to take that basket and put it on top of gefes and put it on top of gefes of olives, because again the gefes is Moses' handle. So the main hatsmana is being the main hatsmana has been done with a davar she'ini Moses' handle. But once you put it on top of the gefes of olives, then it's going to add heat. Then it's going to be Moisef Hevel. So Shema Minashal Zeitim Tanan. So you see that we're talking specifically olives, because you see Rabbi Zera had specifically mentioned where you're putting it on top of olive pulp. So apparently, then sesame pulp is not an issue. The answer is, the Gemara says, not necessarily. La'olam emalach la'olam atmana v'shum shum en nami oster. Maybe when it comes to actual hatsmana, it wouldn't make the difference, and it would be also either way. But when it comes to, here we're not talking about the pot itself is inside the olive pulp. Here we're talking about the pot is inside the straw. And the straw and the box and the container with the straw is on top of the olive pulp. So now the difference is the now we're talking about that whether it's making heat rise upward. You did have some money in one thing, and then you're putting it on top of something else. So the zeisin must be hevla. Only when you have olive pulp over there, only then does that cause heat to rise. Then it has enough internal heat in it to cause that now that heat is going to go and penetrate the straw and start warming up the pot. But shum in pulp, but sesame pulp wouldn't do that. But only in that particular case, maybe, would there be a distinction. When it comes to regular hatsmana, if you're using the pulp itself as the material for hatsmana, then there might not be a difference. Either one would be awesome. So the Gemara doesn't leave it clear whether it's one or the other. The Poskim paskin that both of them are also, because since the Gemara left the question open. Here by the way is where Tosfos also points out the whole matter of here we get back into that matter of which we were discussing before, whether it's considered hatsmana only when it's covered on all sides, or even only when it's touching the source of heat on the bottom. Because after all, that's what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with where the source of heat is only on the bottom, and we're still calling it hatsmana. So is it that, or is it not? Tosfos also goes on to mention there's a distinction, for example, between you're leaving food on a stove, where again, you know, you did go to Fukatum, as we discussed in the previous parak. Okay, there's heat there now, but the heat keeps on, you know, the heat goes away more and more. There's no new heat coming in, so over time it's cooling off, as opposed to when you're doing Atmana and Dover on Moshe Hevel. Even if, as we're saying here in the Gemara, it's only on one side, maybe, okay, it's still the same heat that it was generating before. It continues to generate. It's not like a stove, which keeps on cooling off over time. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to mention something else, which we're going to see how that relates to this matter of Hatmana that we're talking about. The Gemara tells, Rabbi and Rabbi Zera one time visited the household of the Reish Kobusa. Chazu alahu avda. They saw a slave over there. The anach kuzah demaya apuma dekumkuma. They saw a slave over there placing a jug of water, which was cold water, on top of a kettle of hot water. Naz Hey Rabba, and Rabba yelled at him and said, you're not allowed to do that. So Rav Zera asked him, why would that be different than a case, which we're going to learn at the end of the parak, that you're allowed to take a kettle of hot water and put it on top of another kettle of hot water, and that way you want to use that in order to preserve the heat of the top one. If you just put the top one separately, it's going to start cooling off. So like this, you put it on top of something else hot in order to keep it hot. So why is this different over here? Over here, we're not talking about the guy wasn't putting the water on there in order to boil it. Obviously, that would be also on Shabbos. Rav Zera is not going to ask about that. He was putting it there only in order to warm up the cold water a little bit, to take off the chill from it. So what's the problem? And the answer is, Omalei, the Rabbi answers, Hosam Oikume Komoitim. Because the difference over there is he's just preserving the heat of the existing upper kettle. The upper kettle already was hot. All he's doing by putting on top of the lower kettle is to keep it that it should stay hot. Hacha Eludi Karmoilid over here, on the other hand, what he's doing is he's creating new heat in it that there wasn't there before. So that would be awesome. So there's a good deal of discussion among Rishonim what exactly was going on in the story. So Rashi explains that we just said, the situation was that the water on top was cold. He put it on there. It could even be, now according to Rashi, it comes out that it could even be that he put it on there, that it could have been there long enough to actually cook. So we have this guy put the cold water on top of the hot water. Rav Zera thought it should be mutter. Rabba told him it's not mutter because he's adding new heat to it. Now, what was Rav Zera thinking that it should be? What was Rav Zera thinking that he was thinking that it should be mutter? So one possibility is that Rav Zera took the view. We talked about in the previous parak an example where you take a container of cold water or cold oil and you put it near the fire to start warming up, where the way Rashi had learned it over there, and he would say the same thing over here, as long as you actually take it away before it gets to the point of Yad Zilat Esvay, then you're okay. So Rav Zera figured the same thing over here. Okay, so he's putting it on top of a kettle of hot water. And eventually, if he were to leave it there long enough, it would get boiled. But as long as he takes it off in time, then it should be mutter. So Rav Zera thought that, and Rabba is telling him that doesn't work. Only when you're putting on there to begin with something that's hot, then it would be mutter, but you're not allowed to put it on there when it could eventually get cooked, when eventually it could get boiled, even though you're actually taking it off before that. The Tosfos learns in the previous parak, when we talk about the heter for that, would only mean you'd be allowed to put it far away enough, as we discussed there, that's never going to reach Yatzilah this way. That would be mutter, but to do it like this, that we're dealing with over here, that you're putting it directly on top, that would be awesome. There's still a couple of problems with that. One of them, Rishonim bring up the question, Rav Zera didn't know the Braita. I mean, the Gemara is not even quoting the Rav Zera himself realizes that the Braita is mentioning over there hot water on top of the hot water, a kettle on top of a kettle. Didn't he realize the obvious difference that's a difference between hot and cold? So Tosfos brings up the possibility, and so to other Rishonim, he may not have been talking from the Braita. He may have been talking from practical experience. We see in practice that people do that. They put something on top of a hot kettle in order to preserve the heat, and therefore, so he figured it should be the same thing over here, and the difference between over here where it might get hot enough to boil or not didn't occur to him, especially according to Rashi, that you actually might be allowed to do that as long as you take it off first. Another point also that they bring up is sorry, I lost my train of thought here for a second. Another point, though, that Rabbeinu Yonah brings up is, if that's the whole thing that we're talking about, whether we're cooking the water or whether we're boiling the water or not, then what is this whole story doing over here in Perek B'Matonim? It should have been in the previous Perek, where we were talking about the dinim of boiling, of cooking on Shabbos. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah has a whole different explanation over here, which is that we're talking about it is a matter of Hatmana. What happened was the bottom kettle was not on the stove. The bottom kettle was wrapped up, was insulated in something before Shabbos. Now on Shabbos, the slave wanted to take a container of cold water and put it on top of the already insulated hot pot and re-wrap both of them together. And Rav Zera thought, fine, what's the problem? You're allowed to do atmana of something cold. All of the dinim of atmana only apply to insulating something that's hot in order to keep the heat of it. But if you have the other way around, if you have food that's cold and you want to wrap it up in order to keep it cold, that would be perfectly mutter on Shabbos. So Rav Zera thought that should be mutter over here also, and Rav is telling him no, because over here what happens is, fine, the bottom pot was insulated before Shabbos, but now when you're putting the top pot on top of it and putting them and wrapping them both together, you're causing that now heat is going from the bottom pot to the top one, and therefore you're wrapping up the top. Therefore, you're wrapping in Dover HaMoisef Hevel, and that would be no good. Okay. Then the Gemara continues. Since we're mentioning something that happened that time when Rabba and Rav Zeder were at the Reish Kabbalistas, so the Gemara digresses.
Like Nanda. Are you implying that if the top pot only was wrapped up and not the bottom one, that would be okay?
It's possible, I suppose, because heat rises. But on the other hand, if they're all insulated, then heat flows from one to the other, so maybe not. I'm not sure about that point. I mean, the situation here was the other way around. The bottom one was hot and the top one was cold. And according to Rabbeinu Yonah's explanation, what we're saying is that's a problem because now, the point is Rabbeinu Yonah is saying either one by itself would be fine. To have the bottom kettle, which is hot, which was taken off the fire and wrapped up, to have that wrapped up on Shabbos is fine because he wrapped it up before Shabbos in Gavrish in the Moshe kettle. To wrap up the top one by itself would be fine if you want to keep it cold, because you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to take cold food and insulate it even on Shabbos to keep it cold. But to do what the Eved was doing over here, to try to combine those two things, where the result is that you're going to cause that the one on the top is going to become warm, that you're not allowed to do, says Rabbeinu Yonah. That's what Rabbeinu is telling Rabbeinu. But what would it be the other way around if the cold one's on bottom and the hot one's on top? I have no idea. Okay.
No, if you just wrapped up the top without wrapping up the bottom.
Oh yeah, that would be fine. If you have let's say you have a bottle of cold water, let's say you don't have a fridge around, and you want the water to stay cold so you can drink it later, and therefore you wrap it up in a towel so it doesn't absorb heat from the room, that would be fine. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos.
No, what the Eved did is wrap both up, the hot to the cold together.
You're asking about if you do only the cold by itself. Yes, you're allowed to do that.
On top of the hot?
No, not on top of the hot. That's what we're saying. Okay, let's go on. Then this part continues with another thing that happened on that same occasion. Hoder chazye deporas distuder apumi dekuba. Then they saw something else. They saw that this same Eved was taking a sudr, a turban or a piece of cloth that normally is used as a piece of clothing, was laying it over the top of a barrel of water or wine or whatever. And then he put a cup on top of that. And again, Rabbi yelled at him and said, you're not allowed to do that. Omalei Rav Zera Amai. So Rav Zera says, what's the problem? Why shouldn't you be allowed to cover a barrel with a cloth on Shabbos? Okay, Tosfos mentioned there is a point. There is actually a point. The Gemara is going to mention towards the end, much later in the Masechta, we're going to learn that, fine, there are all rules about that, because you're also not allowed to make an oimel on Shabbos, but okay, you can't cover it completely, you can only cover it partially, whatever, but within that, what's the problem of putting a cloth over the top of a barrel of water on Shabbos? So Rabbi tells him, you're going to see soon. What happened? Later on, he saw that this Eved was squeezing out the cloth. And you're not allowed to squeeze water of a cloth out on Shabbos. So now Rabbi Zera understood what happened. Why did Rabbi tell him to begin with that he shouldn't do that? Because when you put a cloth like that over on top of a barrel, and especially on top of that, he put something on top of the cloth over here, which is likely to make that some part of the cloth dips into the water. Then what happens is that you don't want the sudur to be wet, because after all, a sudur is an item of clothing, and normally you wear it. You don't want it to be wet. So then you're liable to squeeze. Then you're going to squeeze it out on Shabbos, and that would be awesome. So now he understood why. Rabbi had said not to put it on there in the first place. Achronim asked the question, what do you mean he saw him squeezing it out? As soon as he sees him squeezing it, he should prevent him from doing that. What does he mean he sees him? So either it means he was about to squeeze it, or the Maloya Royim, in the back of the Gemara, brings up a possibility maybe that Eved was a guy. Okay, he himself, of course, was allowed to do it, but you don't want that he should do this in the first place in order that other people shouldn't think that it's Mutter. Anyway. Amalei, so afterwards, Rav Zera asked Rabba, my shnomi prunka, so why is it different than a case that, again, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, where you are allowed to cover a barrel with a cloth on Shabbos? So why is it over here it was no good, and over there it is? The answer is, Amalei hasim like kofid yalavei, hacha kofid yalavei. The difference is, Rabba tells him, because there you don't care about it to squeeze it out. Because there you're talking about a cloth that's made for that purpose of covering barrels. So if it gets a little bit wet, or even a lot wet, big deal. That's what it's there for, to cover the barrel. And therefore, you don't care if it becomes wet. And therefore, you're not asked to squeeze it out on Shabbos. As opposed to, ha-ha, kofi de lave. Here he minds it, because here it wasn't a cloth that was meant specifically for that purpose. Here it was generally used as a sudder, as a turban, or some other kind of head covering. And therefore, we see that the Eved, once he noticed that it was wet, that it was squeezing it out, which is also on Shabbos. The Tosfos over here refers briefly to something that they write at greater length in Ksubas. There's a Gemara about this in Masechta Ksubas that mentions something involving cloths and barrels on Shabbos. And Rabbi Natan over there in Tosfos has a different understanding of kofid olavei and not kofid olavei. Here we're talking about it with a barrel of water, and when you squeeze water out of a cloth, you're doing the issur of melabin. You're causing the cloth is being cleaned by it. Because the cloth is being cleaned by it, which would be after, when it's mutter would be if it's a barrel of wine or oil or what have you. Tosfos discusses over there at some length that a cloth that absorbed other kinds of liquids, if you squeeze it out on Shabbos, it's not necessarily after. It's not the malacha of soichit, which is like when for example you squeeze out fruit, because that applies only when it's in the original fruit that it came from, not where it was soaked into something else, like over here where it's soaked into the cloth. Malabin it wouldn't be, because it's only considered malabin when you're getting out when you're cleaning it with water. Squeezing out wine or oil from it would not be considered malabin. So therefore, Tosfos learns over there that that's the difference, that Rabbah is telling Rav Zera, there's a difference, not like we're saying over here, according to Rashi, that's the difference between a cloth meant for the purpose and not. Tosfos says over there, rather, it's a difference between whether what the barrel was full of was water or something else. Okay, anyway, the point is that we see, that has nothing to do primarily with the subject of our parak, but the Gemara is just mentioning it because it happened at the same time as the other story, which, as we said, does have to do with the subject of our parak. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of Hatmana, we said in the mission of Eloi B'Tevin, you're not allowed to use straw for Hatmana and a few other things if they're wet. So one of the things we mentioned in the Mishnah is moichin, which is stuffing or soft stuff or whatever. Like we said, it could include, as Rashi had said, it could include pieces of cotton, it could include soft shearings of wool, etc. So let's talk about a different din involving moichin. So we know, therefore, fine, the Mishnah tells us that if a moichin are dry, you can use them for hasmana, but the thing is like this. Moichin can be used for hasmana, but that's not usually what you use them for. Usually what you're going to use moichin for is either you're going to use them, most of the time, Rashi says, you're going to save them and you're going to save up all the soft stuff and eventually make felt out of it, like to make a felt hat or something. So therefore it would be mukta. It would be considered, the Ritva says, it would actually be considered mukta machnas chisod and kiss, because you don't want them to get rude. You want them to eventually, you want them to stay clean and usable to make felt out of, and therefore, so they'd be mukta. No doubt that Rebbe seems to say another possibility, they might be mukta machnas gufoy, whatever it is, the question is, like this, instead you use them for Hashmona on Shabbat, mahu l'talpul on the Shabbat, or you're allowed to move them on Shabbat. So do they become not mukta as a result of the fact that you use them for hasmana, or maybe do they still remain mukta because their essential purpose is to use to make felt eventually? Okay, Tosfos over here distinguishes between plain old mukhin, which can only be used for felt, versus later on we're going to learn in a Mishnah in our paragraph about shearings of wool, which for sure are mukta, but okay, shearings of wool are definitely more important because eventually you could spin them into thread. So okay, so the question is, are these mukhin mukta or not? Amale, so Abaya answers, what do you think? Do you think that this person, because he didn't happen to have straw available right now, therefore he's going to take an entire basket full of mukhin and just make them hefter and make them that he's never going to use them to make felt to make felt out of, and he's only going to use them from now on for hasmana? Most people don't do that. People usually use cheap stuff for hasmana. Usually they use straw. A person like this, also, you could assume that in the future, he'll go back to using straw. This particular week, he didn't have any to use mukhin. But the mukhin themselves should still remain mukta because fundamentally the purpose of them is to save them and use them to make felt. Okay. So the Gemara says, lema mesayale. Should we say that the following braisa supports what Abaya is saying, that the mukhin nevertheless remain mukta because you don't plan for all time to use them for Hashmona? If you designated that these mukhin are always going to be used for Hashmona, then fine, they wouldn't be mukta. But realistically, you're not going to do that. Mukhin are too expensive to use for something like Hashmona when you could use something much cheaper like straw that would do the same job. So by default, they would remain mukta. So should we say that the following braisa supports what Abaya is saying? Braisa says, turn into gizeh semer, you're allowed to do hasmana in shearings of wool. Over tzipeh semer, you're also allowed to use wool which has been combed out and made into like mats. After wool is combed out, then you put it together. You make kind of like wide flat mats out of it, and then eventually you take those and spin them and so forth. So you're allowed to do tasmana in those. Over lashonas shalagomon, you're allowed to use strips of purple wool for the purpose. Uvum mukhin, and you're allowed to use mukhin, the aid and the palpla, no son, but you're not allowed to move any of them on Shabbos. You're not allowed to move any of them on Shabbos. So you see that the mukhin are mukta. So that would be exactly what Abaya is saying, the mukhin are mukta. By the way, there's one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Krachia, has a Pirush on Shabbos, and he mentions another point also, that straw at least, is not mukta on Shabbos, because straw you could use for animal food. Mukhin, the only thing you could use them for is a malacha, usually, is a malacha that's also on Shabbos. So, 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 So that would be the distinction. Shmuel, not only are you allowed to do rachmana in, but it's not mukhsa, because you could use it for animal food, but mukhan have no other purpose. Anyway, the point is the braisa seems to be saying just that, that the mukhan you're not allowed to move. So there you go. However, the Gemara says, imishum ha lo iria, if you're going to try to prove from that braisa, then that's not necessarily relevant, because hachi kama. Because the braisa may be actually teaching us two different dinim. In like Taman Behen in the Kalfan item. The Bryce, you're thinking the Bryce is teaching us one long din. You're allowed to do Hatmana in any of those things. And having done Hatmana in them, however, you should know that the material itself is Mukta. And therefore, as the Mishnah is going to mention later on, the next Mishnah is going to mention that therefore what you would have to do actually, you'd have to have the handle of the lid would be a little bit uncovered. And you'd pick up the lid by the handle. And the mukhin or whatever that are on top would slide off. That you're allowed to do because total idea davar, so it's moving mukhsa indirectly. But you're thinking that that's what the braisa is telling us, that if you did hatmana in one of these things, you should know you're not going to be able to move the material directly. You're going to have to move it indirectly by picking up the pot lid or whatever. Maybe the braisa is telling us two different dinim. Maybe it's saying number one, you're allowed to do hatmana in those things. Number two, leaving aside the matter of atmana, you should know, in general, such things are mukta on Shabbos. So the question is, yichachi ma'ila memra, then what's the chiddush? Obviously, all those things, shearings of wool, a mass of wool, and so forth, would be mukta, because what are you going to do with them on Shabbos? The only thing you usually do with them is spin them into thread, or make them into felt, or whatever, and that's also on Shabbos. The answer is now the tema chazil mizgalayu, because you might have thought, okay, maybe they're not mukta, because after all, you could make a pile of them and lean or recline on them on Shabbos. The mashmalon, and therefore the chiddush is that nevertheless we don't say that. Ordinarily, you don't plan to use them to lean on because they're too expensive for that. You'd rather save them in order to make thread or felt or whatever out of it, and therefore they're mukta machmas chesaron din. But not necessarily is the braisa addressing the question of if you did hatmana with them, whether they still remain mukta or not. Abaya's din is still a din, but we don't have a proof for it from a braisa. Okay. Since we're talking about mukhin, here's another din involving them. Rav Chista shori la'aduri udra l'bei sadia b'shamsa. Rav Chista allowed, if you have a pillow that was full of stuffing, that was full of mukhin, and some or all of the mukhin fell out on Shabbos, so Rav Chista allows you to put them back into the pillow. Once they were used for stuffing for a pillow, then they're not mukta anymore. Then they become part of the keli. So the fact that they were in the pillow beforehand makes them they still don't become mukta when they fall out of the pillow. Even if they fell out Erev Shabbos, they're still considered part of the pillow, and therefore Rav Chista said you're allowed to put them back. Rav Chonon bar Chista asked Rav Chista, how could you say that that's allowed? We learn in a braisa, matirin beis atzav of a Shabbos, you are allowed to untie the neck hole of a garment on Shabbos. Now, what happened was, you in those days, you know, they didn't have washing machines. Not everybody did their own laundry. Sometimes you would send your clothes to a laundryman who would do it for you. Now, of course, they have clothes from many other people there as well. One of the things that they would do, if you gave them, let's say, if you gave them a shirt, or actually the shirts that we're talking about are more like, for example, talus cotton. They have a big hole in the middle for the neck. So what the laundryman would do as part of the process, when he has it by hand, is he would tie the neck hole of the garment closed, and then afterwards, when you got it back, then you have to untie that. So the braisa says you're allowed to do that on Shabbos because it was never tied. Now we're going to learn the dinim of tying and untying knots in the 15th is going to be the subject of the 15th perek of Our Masechta. But a basic rule in that. Is if it's a kesher she'ene shokayama, if it's a knot that was never meant to be permanent or even semi-permanent, then you're allowed to. Here it's like that, so you gave the clothing to the laundryman today, and he tied it, and tomorrow he's washing it and giving it back to you, and you're untying it, and therefore it's not a kesher shokayama, so you're allowed to open that on Shabbos. Avoloi poiskin, but you're not allowed, so you're allowed to untie the knot, but you're not allowed to open the neck hole, which means...
Even if it's a double knot and he doesn't have the kavana?
Yes, because even that's the point. Even though it was a double knot, because it was not a permanent knot. That's, again, when we're going to get to, eventually, in a couple of months, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to get to the 15th parak of our Masechta, and we're going to talk about there are various kinds of knots, some which are also to tie and untie the Araita, some which is also to tie and untie the Rabbanon, and some which are mutter. And one of the general rules in that regard is if it's a non-professional knot and it's not meant to be permanent, then you're allowed to tie it and untie it on Shabbat.
And a double knot is not considered a professional knot?
No. A double knot is the kind of knot that any regular person makes. A professional knot would be, for example, the Mishnah gives over there, for example, certain knots that sailors make, let's say. The average person doesn't make such knots, but sailors make them in the ropes on the ship. That would be an example of a professional knot. Just a plain old knot, like the kind you or I make, is not considered a professional knot. So again, if it's meant to be permanent or semi-permanent, then it's also Zerabbanan. But here it's not even that. So it's only meant for as long as the guy is washing the clothing, and as soon as you get it back, you're going to untie it. So you're allowed to do that. But Abeloid Poitskin, but you're not allowed to open the neck hole to begin with. So in other words, if the clothing did not have a neck hole in the first place, then you're not allowed to cut out or rip open a new neck hole on Shabbos. We're going to discuss that point soon in the Gemara. The Ein Noisin is a Mochin Lo B'Sech HaKayar V'Lo B'Sech HaKesef, and the Braisa continues, which is relevant to what we're talking about. You're not allowed to put stuffing into a pillow or into a cushion. The Yomtiv, and that's true even on Yomtiv. The Ein Sarach Lo B'Shabbos. Needless to say, you wouldn't be allowed to do that on Shabbos. So what are you telling me, that you're allowed to put the stuffing back into a pillow? The answer is, like Kasha HaBachadzi HaBa'atiki. It depends whether we're talking about stuffing that was previously in the pillow or was not. The chadzi means new. If you have a new pillow that never had stuffing in it, then you're right. You wouldn't be allowed to put stuffing in it on Shabbos because that would be making it into a keli where it wasn't a keli before. But when the stuffing was already in the pillow already was a keli, and then the stuffing came out, then yes, you're allowed to put that back in on Shabbos. So no contradiction. Interesting point, by the way, Achronim, contemporary poskim talk about the question: Are you allowed to blow up balloons or balls or whatever on Shabbos? So, if, for example, a balloon was never blown up before, then based on the Gemara over here, it would be a problem because it would be making it into a keli where it wasn't before. But let's say, for example, you have a bowl that was blown up and now it's deflated, and now you want to reinflate it on Shabbos. So the Shlomo Zalman, for example, says that it would be mutter, because the same thing over here. We're saying that it was a keli. Now all you're doing is blowing it back up and making it into the same keli that it was. On the other hand, the Minchas Yitzchak and a couple of other Achronim say that no, because the stuffing, at least it's the same stuffing that was in the pillow before, and now you're putting back, as opposed to before, the air that you're putting into the bowl now is obviously not the same air that was there originally, so maybe that would be a problem.
If you have loose foam and you want to put it in a pillowcase, and the foam's never been used as a pillow,
then no, you can't do that on Shabbos. That's what we're saying here. In fact, we learn in a braise of that distinction. You're not allowed to put stuffing into a pillow or a cushion on yomtiv. Then tzarich lomar b'Shabbos, needless to say on Shabbos. But noshu, but if they fell out of the pillow, then where they were already there, then machzir noisin b'Shabbos, you're allowed to put them back on Shabbos. Then tzarich lomar b'yomtiv, needless to say, you're allowed to put them back on yomtiv. So we see that same distinction that Rav Chisda just said. Okay. Since we're talking about this matter of opening up neck holes on Shabbos, so let's talk more about that. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, ha-pesheach beis ha-tzava b'Shabbos chayim chabbos. If a person opens up the neck hole of a garment on Shabbos, then he would be chayim chabbos. So again, we're not talking about the kind of thing before where the laundryman just tied it closed. You said you are allowed to untie that. So according to Rashi, what we're talking about over here is plain and simple. Imagine you have a plain piece of cloth, not a plain piece of cloth, whatever. You have a garment, you have, let's say, for example, a talus cotton. It was all done, it was completely made, but it doesn't have a neck hole. So you want to rip open or cut open a neck hole on Shabbos. That would be chayv chatos because you're doing makta b'patish. Or the Rambam has a different understanding of it, that you'd be doing the malacha of kereya. You're doing the Malacha ripping. There's a bit of discussion among Achronim what Rashi and the Rambam are all doing about. Anyway, the point is that the point is, so Rashi and the Rambam understand it that way, that we're talking about a garment that never had a neck hole, and now you're making a neck hole in it. There are the Ramban and a couple of other Rishonim learn differently, that we're not talking about that. Obviously, that would be also on Shabbos. There's no chiddush in that. What we mean is that, let's say, in the case of a laundryman or whatever, instead of just tying the neck hole closed, let's say, for example, he sewed it shut. Or let's say he sewed a piece of clothing over the hole. That would be the kind of thing that we're saying, that if a person rips off those stitches or that piece of cloth on Shabbos, then it would be a malacha, and then he'd be chayiv on Shabbos. Okay. Maski for Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, why would it be a malacha of Shabbos? Ma bein zula megufas chavis. What's the difference between that and the stopper of a barrel? Later on in the Masechta, we're going to discuss a case that you have now the barrels of wine in those days. We know the barrels were made out of udim here. They had a hole on the top. They had an opening. Then an opening on the top, and you'd put in a stopper into that opening. So the Mishnah later on says, or actually the Gemara later on says, that you're allowed to, let's say you have a barrel over there where the top of it is covered with a stopper. Instead of removing the stopper, you're allowed to actually chop off the top of the barrel and pour out the wine from it. So we see that even though the barrel is not usable as long as it's sealed with the stopper, and usually the stopper was cemented in place, so it would be a hassle to take it off. So therefore, you might find it easier just to cut off the whole top of the barrel with stopper and all. And we're saying you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So what's the difference? You can't use the barrel as long as it's stopped closed. You can't use the shirt as long as the neck hole is closed. So why is it in that case you're allowed to do it, and in the case over here we're saying it's also daraisa? The difference is, Rava says, because in the case of the neck hole of the garment, it's all connected together. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about it's all actually to begin with woven together. You're trying to cut out or rip a new neck hole. So you're doing something that never existed there before. As opposed to when it comes to the barrel that's stoppered closed, it's still not one piece. The stopper over there is stuck into the top of the barrel, but it's the kind of thing that usually is meant to be removed. So therefore, you're allowed to do that. Taking out the stopper would not be considered making a new keli, and therefore chopping off the top of the keli wouldn't be also either. Tosfos actually has a bit of a problem with that explanation, because the fact of the matter is you're still creating a new opening in the barrel where you didn't before. But Tosfos says the case that Rav Kahana is bringing up to Rava is not the case involving chopping off the top of the barrel. The case is over there. You have the Mishnah. The Mishnah discusses that you're allowed to make a hole in the stopper. So the question is, why are you allowed to make a hole in the stopper over there versus over here you're not allowed to cut out the neck hole of the clothing? And again, the answer is that the Magufa is not essentially considered part of the Chobis itself. And therefore, you'd be allowed to do that. The Tosfos says, because the concept is making a hole on Shabbos is only also, Tosfos says, we're going to learn this concept later in the Masechta, only if it's also lahachnis or lahoitzi, only if it's the kind of hole that you use for things to go in and things to go out. So a neck hole on a piece of clothing, for example, is like that. You put your head through the hole, and then you take off the clothing and you take your head out through the hole. But in the case of a hole in a stock or a barrel, it would only be meant to pour out the wine through it. You're not going to pour wine in through the hole. Therefore, Tosfos says that kind of thing would be mutter when you're doing it in the stopper as opposed to over here.
Why is the difference if you just take it out instead of putting it in, or vice versa?
So if you have the kind of hole which is meant only for things to go in one direction, then that kind of thing is different, and that kind of thing is never also daraisa if it's also it's only going to be dirabanan, as opposed to when it's a hole which is meant for things to go in and out, then in some cases it can be also daraisa. So again,
what's the basis for the difference two ways versus one way? What's the basis of the difference? You're still using the whole.
No, because the basis, we're going to talk about it later in the Masechta in detail, so I don't want to get into it right now, but there is a difference. There is a difference between the kind of hole that's made for things to go in and out is more like the kind of holes that were made in the Mishkan as opposed to one that's meant only in one direction is not. So let's deal with that later on. Okay. Since we're talking about things that are connected and things that are not connected, we said over here you have the neck hole is connected, the stopper is not connected to the barrel. So now the Gemara is going to digress further. This is a digression on top of a digression to talk about a din involving things that are attached. As far as the din of Truma V'Tala, Rami later of Yirmi of Zera. Rabbi Yirmi pointed out a contradiction to the Zera between two Mishnahs. So now we learn in one Mishnah, Sholol Shokovdin. The sewing together of laundryman. So besides that we mentioned before, when you give a shirt or a talis cotton or whatever to a laundryman, he would tie or sew the neck hole closed. Besides that, you have, let's say you're giving a whole bunch of laundry to the laundryman. Now, it includes large items and it includes small items. He doesn't want to lose the small items because then you're going to come complaining to him. So what he does is temporarily he sews them all together. He takes needle and thread, temporarily sews together all the items you gave him. Then that way, when he's washing them, they don't come apart. Nowadays, you would just, you know, it's like nowadays when you have socks, you put in the washing machine, he put them in a mesh bag in order that they don't get lost. So in those days, the equivalent of it was that they would sew them temporarily together, and then they would rip out the stitches afterwards. So that kind of thing. So you have things that normally are apart, but temporarily they're joined together. The shalshelas shamakeches, or a keychain that has a bunch of different keys on it. The habeged shel tofah b'kilayim, or a piece of clothing that has kilayim, that has shatnez sewn into it. So let's say, for example, you have a couple of woolen garments that are sewn together with linen thread, where therefore you're going to rip it because it also has shatnez. So all those kinds of things, chibur l'truma, all of those, as far as the dinim of truma v'tara, are considered connected together ad sheyaskel lahasir, until he begins untying and unloosening them. So in the case, let's say, for example, of all the clothes that were sewed together by the laundryman, if while they're still sewed together like that, if one of them becomes tameh, then all of them become tameh. But once he starts ripping out the stitches, then it won't be like that. Then even the ones that are attached together, if one of them becomes tameh, the other one won't, because now that he's doing a maaseh to untie them, then he shows that he doesn't want to consider it one thing anymore. So the point is, Alma Shaloi B'Shach Malacha Nami Chibur. So we see that even when things are not right now in use, the fact that there's a temporary connection between them is enough to make them considered connected for the purposes of Tumah V'Tahara. Because again, for example, these clothing that you gave to the laundryman, nobody's actually wearing them right now. Right now, the laundryman is just washing them, and we're still saying that as long as the stitches are in there, they're considered connected. Uraminu, but I have a contradiction from a different Mishnah. Makil sha'osid yablakodom, if you have a stick that you made into a makeshift handle for an axe, you have the axe head, you have the metal axe head. Right now, it didn't come with a regular handle. So now, what you do is when you need to use it, then you find an appropriately sized piece of wood and you stick it in there to use as a handle. And the din is chibur l'truma b'shach malacha. It's only considered connected as far as truma only when you're actually using the axe. B'shach malacha ein shelo b'shach malacha loy, implying that when you're not using the axe, then that stick is not considered connected to the axe head. And if one of them becomes tumei, the other one is not. So what's the difference? Amalei, the Rav Zera answers him, hosam, because the difference is in the case of the axe, shelo b'shach malacha, when you're not actually using the axe. And after all, the stick was not made for the purpose of the axe. It wasn't shaped to fit the axe or whatever. So therefore, Adamasi was Zerka Levena Eitzim. A person is just as likely to take the stick that he used as an axe handle and throw it among his other pile of wood and eventually use it for firewood or for something else. So therefore, so when you're not using it, the axe head and this makeshift handle can't be considered connected. Hacha, but when it comes to, for example, the clothes that are sewn together, even when he's not actually using them, even when he's not actually washing them right now, or let alone nobody's wearing them, it's still considered, if he wants them to stay sewn together until until it's time to rip out the stitches, get him a tanful, because this way, if the clothes get dirty, then he can wash them without having to sew them back together. In other words, again, the point is, the reason why the laundryman is sewing the clothes together is that none of them get lost when he's washing them. So what would happen if after he washes them, before the customer comes and picks them up, they become dirty? He's going to have to wash them again. And in that case, if he undoes the stitches, he's going to have to redo the stitches. It's just going to be wasted effort. So from his point of view, he'd rather leave them stitched together until the customer picks them up. So even shaloi b'shas malacha, even when he's done washing them and they're just sitting waiting for the customer to pick them up, it can be considered connected because he wants them to stay connected. As opposed to with the axe handle, once you're done using the axe right now, then you'll throw away the piece of wood. Next time you'll just find another piece of wood that will serve the same purpose. Okay. So the Gemara says, the surah masnu lalaho shmaita b'shmeidir b'chista. In surah, in the yeshiva of surah, they taught the following discussion that we're going to have, a related discussion about things that are connected in the name of Rav Chista. In the yeshiva of Pumbedista, they learned that it was Rav Kahana who brought up this point, or others say that they had in the yeshiva of Pumbedista, that they learned that it was Rava who brought it up. Because Rav Chista was the Rosh Yeshiva in Surah, and Rav Kahana and Rava were the Rosh Yeshiva at one time or another in Pumbedista. So each one quoted in the name of their Rosh Yeshiva. The discussion was as follows. Man tona hom milta de omer abonan kol mechubolai hareu kamayu. Which Tana is it that says the concept that we know that when something is connected to something else, then it's like with something else? So if you have two kalim that are attached together, and now none of them depends on the other. You don't have, for example, let's say with the clothes that are sewed together, one of them doesn't need the other one to be sewn to it. The shirt that has a sock sewn to it, the shirt doesn't need the sock, and the sock really doesn't need the shirt either. Conceivably, the laundryman could sew the sock to something else. So therefore, so which Tana is it that says nevertheless such things are considered connected? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, the mayor. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav that would be specifically according to the mayor. It's now we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim. Now you have like this. You have such a thing as a kira. We learned about it extensively in the previous parak, a stove, where you have, it's a box made out of earthenware with holes on top that you can put pots into. Sometimes what they would do is that sometimes you have a kira, and they would attach various things to it on the side. They would cement on various things onto it onto the side that are also useful in the kitchen. So the Mishnah says, Beis HaPach, if you have a container over there that is meant to put in oil in order to heat up the oil a little bit. So you have, let's say, you know, you want to use oil for cooking, you want to use oil for smearing on your skin. So you might attach a little container to the kira and cement it onto the side of the kira. And that way, the heat of the kira will also transfer on a weekday, obviously, we're talking about. And that way, some heat from the kira will get to the oil and warm it up a bit. So you could have that. Or base a tavlin. Or you have attached to the kira, you might have a container where you put spices. Or a place where you might put a lamp, shavakira, that all of them, any of those things are attached to a kira. So the din is matamin b'magav ein matamin b'haver jivir a meir. So the meir says like this: Now we know that clay cheres have the unique thing that they're able to become tomei even if the tumah doesn't actually touch them, even if the tumah is only inside them without touching. So the meir makes the distinction like this: if the main kira becomes tumah, or vice versa, if one of these kalim that's attached to it becomes tomei by the tumah touching it directly, then the other one is going to become tummy. So if a dead sheriff, for example, falls into the kira and lands on the bottom of it, then not only the kira is going to be tummy, but also the beis hapach or whatever that's attached to the kira. But the ein matamin ba'avir, divrei a mayor, but a mayor says these other things wouldn't become tummy if the tumah was only hanging inside the airspace of the oven without touching it. Then only the oven, the stove rather, I mean, would become tameh. The beis hapach and whatnot would not. But Rav Shimon matahar. Rav Shimon says it's always tahar. The kalim are not considered connected at all. Now, the same thing. These things that are attached to a kira are not essential for the functioning of the kira. A kira can work quite well without a beis hapach attached to it. And still, the mayor is saying that they're considered connected as far as tumah v'tahara. So we see, therefore, someone was talking about clothing that was sewn together for, by the laundry men, for example. Same idea. Okay, so the Gemara asks, this Shlomo Reb Shimon, I can understand why Reb Shimon says what he says, that they're not Mekabel Truma, Kasaga Lav Kekira Damu, because he takes the view that these things that are attached to the Kira, okay, they're not like the Kira, they're not essential to it, therefore they're not considered connected, and therefore they're not Mekabel Truma when the Kira becomes Tomei. El a little Meir, but why is Reb Meir distinguishing between how the Truma came to the main Kira, whether it came by touching it or in the air? If these things are considered part of the Kira, then they should become Tomei even if the Kira became Tomei by the Tumah remaining inside its airspace. And if they're not considered like part of the Kira, then they shouldn't become Tomei even if the Tumah touched the Kira directly. Why is Rameh being inconsistent? The answer is, you can actually say, even Rameh agrees that at Daraisa level, these things are not considered attached to the Kira at all. But Abanon who de Gozrubahu, and it's only that Abanon who made this Gzera, that they're going to be Mekabel Truma. And therefore the distinction. So the question is, he Gozrubahu, I feel about Avir Namali Tamu, knew, and if they made that Gzera, then they should make the Gzera that it would apply even if the Truma came into the airspace. Still, why is there that distinction? The answer is, the Gemara says, Avdubahu Rabbanon Hekera, because the Chachamim made a Heker, and that the Chachamim wanted to make some kind of distinction, Ki Hekidulai Ofdil Misref Alay Truma V'Kodshim, in order that you don't come to burn Truma and Kodshim because of it. We know that in general, when something is Rabbanon, we know that in general, when something is Tomei only with Rabbanon, then if that thing is Matami Truma, then you're not going to burn the Truma. Usually you're only going to say that the Truma is suspended, that you can't burn it, but you can't eat it either. So the Chachamim wanted to make sure that you realize that this Truma over here is only Dirabanan. Otherwise, you're going to think it's a Truma Daraisa. And then if Truma touches let's work out the scenario over here. So you had the Kira became Tomei by a sheriff or what have you falling into it. If we're going to say that even if the Kira becomes Tomei from the airspace, we're going to say that now the Beis HaPach attached to the outside of the Kira is going to become Tomei as well. And then later on, let's say, what if you put oil of Truma in that Beis HaPach, and you're going to think, and it's going to be Tomei, and you're going to think that you should burn it, but you shouldn't burn it, because the whole concept that the Beis HaPach became Tomei is only the Rabbanan. So therefore, the Rabbanan made that distinction between whether the main Kira became Tomei from the air, or by direct touching, in order that people should realize that this whole concept is only Dirabanan, and that way, either way, if they put oil of Truma in the Beis HaPach, they're not going to burn it, they're just going to be toilet. So that's the difference, in other words. So Rav Shimon doesn't accept that concept. So Rav Shimon says, I don't need any of that. We're just going to say it's not Mekabel Truma and have done with it. But Rav Shimon, Rav Meir is going to say, we do say that Dirabanan is Mekabel Truma, but we need to make that distinction. Now, what about what kind of distinction do we make similarly when it comes to the clothing that was sewn together, for example? We're saying that if the clothing is sewn together by the same logic, according to the mayor, the clothing that's sewn together also, if one of them is Tomei, that the other ones become Tomei is also only Dirabanan. The distinction Tosfos says is that in that case you have, the din will be, when it comes, if the clothing became Tomei with Tomas Mes, and you have to sprinkle with Paraduma water, every individual piece of clothing will have to have paradum or water get on it in order to become tahor. That's the distinction that we'll make. So we'll say, in other words, that when it becomes tamei, if one piece becomes tamei, then all of them do. But when it comes to making them tahor, you need to be metahor each one separately. That will be the hector that we need to show that the whole thing is only dirabanan. When it comes to the kira, we can't do that, Tosva says, because the kira is made out of earthenware, and earthenware is not you can't make earthenware things tahor. There's no sprinkling paraduma water on earthenware things. Therefore, the chachamim had to make a different hector, and Rav Meir is saying they made the distinction between whether it became tamei from the air or from touching it. Okay. So we'll continue with this discussion of things that are attached together tomorrow, Beis Hashem. When we say that the fact that they're attached together means that if one of them becomes Tomei, the other one also does, and when not, and then we'll continue with Hatmana and with other topics tomorrow.
How do you attach a kira to another keli with a rope or with a string?
No. With cement or what have you.
So you have, let's say, for example, so you had a kira. You want to attach to the outside of it, let's say, this beis hapach. You want to have a little container over there of oil that's convenient, and that way the oil warms up more easily. So what you do is you take a little container. You take a little bottle or something made out of earthenware. You put it next to the kira, and you put some cement between them to hold it in place.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering.
Yeah.
Okay. Shkoyach. Shkoyach. Have a wonderful day.